Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today is episode number 43 with Todd Pringle.
Many product managers, most of them, in fact, don't have anybody directly working for them. They, you know, work with everybody and yet are the owner. And that's a really interesting role. And one of the things that I found useful, I would say, in the military that I translated was I found personally that getting things done, even in the military where it is a little bit more hierarchical, that, you know, treating people as peers and as experts in their areas and motivating them to get things done without using sort of your direct authority over them was the best way to get things done. And that skill set, I think, really translates well to product management.
The top three reasons to listen to today's episode are: one, baller. Todd Pringle is an absolute baller. He has a long history in product management at some of the most prominent companies in Silicon Valley at the most exciting times in the internet. He is a great example of someone who has taken the long view on their career, honed their craft, and deepened their functional expertise. Number two, relevance. Not only does he have an impressive career in product management, he puts that all in perspective by providing insight on paths to product management today. He covers how the role of product manager has changed over time and advice for veterans seeking to enter this worthwhile field. Number three, Stitcher. I come across as a love-struck groupie in this interview because Todd's company, Stitcher, is one of my most favorite and often used apps. Many of you are listening right now to this podcast on Stitcher, and if you're not, you should seriously consider it. I'm not getting paid for this promotion, so you know it's genuine. As always, about beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find other episodes and resources to help you in your civilian career. You'll also find the show notes for this episode, including links to everything we discuss and timestamps to cover each topic we cover, just in case you'd like to hop around the episodes like the cereal Trix rabbit, hopping around, eating his favorite Trix shapes, everything except the banana, because the banana is the worst part of Trix. So let's dive into my interview with Todd Pringle. Well, joining me today from San Francisco, California, is Todd Pringle. Todd, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Justin.
So a quick background for our listeners. Todd is the general manager and vice president of product at Stitcher, the podcasting app that many of you are using right now to listen to this podcast. He started out at UCLA, after which he served in the Navy for 4 years as part of the Supply Corps. After he transitioned out of the Navy, he attended the Stanford Graduate School of Business, after which he held a variety of product management roles at Netscape and AOL in the early 2000s, and then eBay, AirPlay, and another company called Uno. Todd also holds two U.S. patents. And in full disclosure, I love Stitcher. Todd, I was just looking before the show. I have 383 hours of listening and 4,200 different episodes. So you make my commute and walking life much more enjoyable.
That's awesome. Yeah, we always love hearing from real people who use it. That's great.
Well, I guess to start out, if you were explaining to someone on active duty your role as a general manager and vice president of product, how would you explain to them what you do?
That is a really hard question. I find that I still haven't totally explained it that well to my parents.
the toughest audience of all.
It is. I think they still wonder a little bit. Yeah, it's I guess one of the ways to think about it, it's a little bit like being a CO or XO, but instead of being that role for a ship or a submarine, more like a product, in this case, a piece of software that, you know, people use on their phones or on the internet. And in the role, you sort of, what I love about it is you get to do a lot of different stuff, everything from thinking about where the product should go and how it should evolve, laying out a roadmap, how you want to get there, thinking about how you want to grow the users of the product, so how you want to market the product and get new people to discover it. Everything from talking to, in our case, content partners, the people who make the content, make the podcast themselves. That's everything from, you know, big companies like ESPN and CNN down to you as a independent podcaster, thinking about the financial aspect of the business and how you grow the monetization and the revenues, building up an organization. So it's a little bit of everything, and obviously it's a big team effort, and a lot of functional area experts that work on writing the code or managing the finances, that sort of stuff.
That's great. I mean, I imagine that variety keeps things interesting, and it seems like an incredible way to be involved with every aspect of the company. I'm wondering, what does that look like on a day-to-day basis or on a week-to-week basis, just painting that picture of what life is like as a general manager?
Yeah, it's kind of like the functional responsibilities. It's pretty varied on a day-to-day basis. I think some days are spent really thinking about the future of the product and speccing things out, even creating sort of wireframe designs or sketch designs, if you will, of what the product might look like and working with designers on that. Some days, as for example, you're getting close to shipping a new version of the product, you will have a lot of meetings with the developers and the quality assurance folks to work through bugs and issues with the product and try and fix them before you release it to the public. Some days can be very administrative, doing performance reviews for people or thinking about bonus allocations for people. So it really is highly varied, and I do like that a lot. I think the common theme is really a lot of communication through a variety of methods. We have people who are remote who we do Google Hangouts or Skype with, to in-person meetings here in the office. So there is a lot of coordination and sort of being that central hub for the team and making sure that everybody's talking as needed and things are moving forward. So.
And when you graduated from business school, what initially attracted you to that product management role?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think when I was coming out of business school in 2000, obviously it was a very, very interesting time. The dot-com bubble hadn't quite burst yet. And I think, with a military background, I definitely went to business school as a way to sort of help me in a career transition. And coming out of it into the technology world, at the time, I really felt like there were two main options. One was business development, as a lot of companies at the time were doing, co-branding and partner marketing and that sort of stuff for their websites, really, mostly at the time. And then the other role was product management. And that was attractive to me simply because it felt a little broader, a little bit like I was making something, and that was appealing to me. And so I chose to do a product management oriented summer internship in between years of business school, and as a way to kind of figure out, sounds interesting, but in practice, is it something that I would like? And I think what I found, I worked at Sun Microsystems, and I worked on a piece of hardware that used. Stuck in some back office data center for telcos and for telephone companies. And what I found was I loved the role, but I quickly discovered that I wanted to do consumer-oriented products from a personal interest perspective. And just because I'd love to be able to talk to friends and family and have them use a product and have people sort of understand the product and what it is and get feedback that way. So. Hence I went to Netscape after that, which was a great experience.
Yeah, I imagine too with a product like at Netscape or most of the products you've worked with in your past, the degree to which you can iterate and rapidly change and rapidly get feedback, it must be an exciting dimension of product management because there's so many sources of feedback and you're not locked into shipping a physical product where I imagine that feedback loop is so much slower.
Yes. No, it really is. I mean, it's a blessing and a curse, right? When you're working on products with millions of users, it's a lot of voices and a lot of competing voices and people with very different ways that they use a product potentially. And so part of the challenge, I think, of product management is sort of being someone who can synthesize all those different inputs and come up with a path for the product that is going to be a successful one. So, but it's, you know, it's interesting because over the time that I've done product management, I think that rapid iteration has just increased. Working on a client piece of software like a Netscape browser that somebody had to download and install on their computer, we spent a lot of time in between releases on that product because we felt like you had to get it completely right, and because it can be downloaded and installed. Whereas when you work on web products in particular, you can change stuff multiple times a day and really quickly iterate. So, but that pace has certainly increased, I think, in the time that I've been doing it.
That I'll jump ahead on that. I wanted to ask about that in a little bit, but since you bring it up, I mean, I'm just really fascinated by your background, having had 15 years plus in the product management position. What are some other ways that you've seen that role change in the last 15 years?
Yeah, I think one of the main ones that I've seen, in the last, 5 to 10 years is the role has gotten a lot more technical, at least in the sense that I think in order to get into these roles nowadays, a lot of employers really do look for, CS or other engineering undergrad degrees. I do not have that. I was in economics undergrad at UCLA. So I think it's harder to go the path that I did and get into it, which, has its pros and cons. I mean, I as somebody who works in the domain now, I appreciate people who have that skill quite a lot. And when I recruit for product managers, it's definitely something that I look for. However, I feel like, there are aspects of product management that are non-technical, and sometimes people who are very technical are not as good at those disciplines. So, having a blend of those two things is good. For me, I had to, I think, over time, really on the job, improve my technical skills. But that's a big one. I think you'll find like companies today, many of the big ones won't consider product management candidates who don't have a CS degrees or other very technical undergrad degrees.
Yeah, that's one of the things I wanted to ask about as well, especially, if you were transitioning out of the military right now, what are those career paths to a product management role? Do you feel like business school helps towards that end? Or if you were going through that similar transition today, how would you try to break into a product management role?
Yeah, I think there's a bunch of different paths. I do think the MBA one is still a pretty good one. I think, different companies out there value it more or less. But there's plenty that I think value it pretty highly and have plenty of role models of MBAs doing very well in product management roles. So I think that is a path for sure. I think, there is a lot, as you might know, of coding bootcamp style programs these days that are, 6 month programs or, that sort of duration where you can go in and learn to code. Many people do that. And then they even build their own apps as sort of, examples of their skill and get into product management that way just by simply doing it themselves. And I think that's a more and more a viable path for people to get into it. And then there's, obviously other technical training and schooling that you could do as well, but tends to be a little bit longer. The other way to get into it is, to start out in a role within a tech company that is not product management, for example, quality assurance, or even software development, if you have a software background, but even marketing or product marketing. And if you get into those roles, which may be a better fit for your background, and do well, learn the product, talk to the developers, really start to improve your technical skills, then often there's moves that you could make within companies into a product management role, simply sort of proving that you have the chops to do it while you're there in a slightly different role.
What about for a veteran who might not know a lot about product management, but maybe they're listening and what you're saying sounds really exciting to them? What are some indications that they might enjoy a role in product management and might be well suited for it? And what are some signs that they might not really like this or be well suited for a product management type role?
Yeah, I think a couple things to sort of indicate that you might be good at it or have a propensity for it. One is if you find yourself in organizations that you've been in the past sort of working really well across different functional areas and different groups with very different interests and being able to bring people together to meet a goal or produce something. That's a lot of what product management is. Many product managers, most of them, in fact, don't have anybody directly working for them. They, work with everybody and yet are the owner. And that's a really interesting role. And one of the things that I found useful, I would say in the military that I translated, I found personally that getting things done, even in the military where it is a little bit more hierarchical, treating people as peers and as experts in their areas and motivating them to get things done without using sort of your direct authority over them was the best way to get things done. And that skill set, I think, really translates well to product management. I think maybe on the flip side, if you really don't want to get into the details of technology, in particular, if you want to be in software, or you have a hard time understanding why consumers do what they do or don't have an interest in figuring out why, those are probably red flags that it's probably not for you.
Yeah, and I love that. One of the things I loved about what you said is that leadership approach you took in the military, which I'm not sure how common that is. I'm hoping it's more common than less of treating people as experts and not using positional authority. One of the things I wanted to ask about is you've held so many very high-level leadership roles now on the civilian side of things. And I was curious to know how you view leadership on the civilian side differing from the leadership that you saw within the military.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good question. I do think it comes back to that point a little bit in that I saw a lot of people in the military who really relied too heavily on their positional authority to get things done. And there's an aspect of the military that is transient, as you know, in the sense that you change duty stations and you change places that you work. And so sometimes, you can get away with that. And I think when you work at a company for an extended period, it's more difficult to do that and be successful. I think that's that's definitely something that I have seen myself.
I've struggled with how to ask this question because I'm just there's so many things about your background that I'd love to dive into and ask you because you've been at in both. Timing of internet growth, you were there at really key moments and then at really incredible companies. But I thought I would toss it more to you of if you could just walk us through your career since business school and kind of what you've learned along the way. And what I found compelling about your background is that as an MBA myself, sometimes I feel like this jack of all trades and master of none. But at least from what I can see on LinkedIn from your background, you've really honed your craft of product management. You've really consistently invested in that skill set in a variety of companies. So I thought it'd be helpful for listeners to see how you built that career and how you moved from one organization to another.
Yeah, I mean, it's career paths are so interesting. I agree. Like when I'm interviewing people or looking at people's backgrounds, it's so varied the way people move from place to place. I think, you know, I definitely, coming out of school, wanted to do consumer product management. I had figured that much out anyway. And, you know, for me, despite it being a time when, you know, many of my classmates were starting companies or really wanted to go to startups because that was the thing to do. And there was obviously a big boom going on at the time. I just felt like I wanted to go somewhere where I could learn from people who are really good at it. And Netscape had a really great reputation as a place to learn product management. I lucked out in the sense that the timing was good to go to a big company that was relatively stable, you know, whereas a lot of my classmates had a hard time, you know, bouncing around as they'd gone to startups that went under pretty quickly after that. So, you know, and I, you know, I so it was at Netscape and AOL, and then I really thought hard about transitioning to a startup after that, and in hindsight, probably should have. I had a couple opportunities, but I, you know, I liked eBay was a really, you know, hot company at the time.
How big were they at the time when you joined?
I mean, it was big. It was already public. I couldn't tell you how many employees, but you know, somewhere probably between 5,000 and 10,000. So it was you know, but again, really smart people, great place, a lot of, to do product management, you know, and but I felt like after I'd done that I really wanted to go to a small company where I feel like, you know, and this has been validated as I've done it, like you can have a much bigger impact, you know, within the smaller organization and really kind of, you know, be a material contributor to the destiny of the company. And so I, you know, obviously made that transition. I went to a startup that was founded by a couple guys I worked with at AOL, and came in as the first sort of product person there.
Was this Uno or AirPlay?
AirPlay. AirPlay, yeah, which was, a company that did sort of mobile gaming against live TV. So it was games that you played while you were watching an NFL football game or a basketball game. It was really cool, sort of like many technologies, a technology ahead of its time, which is sort of a macro interesting thing about tech and how timing oriented a lot of this stuff is, how some of these technologies have been worked on in one form or another for many years. And for whatever reason, you know, a combination of things have been successful at different times and not others. But that was just, I think, a great, I think I really doing that, felt like, yes, you know, working in a small team, you know, really creating something, from scratch, you know, and that was just super exciting and continues to be at small startups that I've been at. And I think, you know, over time, I have worked very hard, as you noted, to make sure that I continue to really have a heavy product focus and role within the companies that I'm at, because that's what I really love. I think naturally, as you become more senior in these organizations, you do get a broader set of responsibilities. And I, as an MBA background, like I love that aspect of it too. But what I didn't want to do was, you know, get into a managerial role where I was really far away from the product and, you know, really doing more just pure general management.
You mentioned that, you know, a couple different decision points at which you're evaluating go to an established company or jump off to a startup. And you talked at first about when in business school, when everyone was going to startups, and it almost feels like we're at a similar period in time in some ways, at least right now, where I imagine a lot of vets listening are interested in the startup scene, and they're seeing it in pop culture, they're seeing it in so many different ways. What advice would you give to someone right now if they're, let's say they're getting out of the military in the next 6 months and they're thinking of jumping into an early stage startup? What advice would you have for them, pro or con or both?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think, you know, my advice generally would be, you know, whatever you do, I think the most important thing is you have to have a real passion and interest around it. So, you know, big or small, you need to love the product and the service that you're delivering, because, you know, big company or small, that's something that will sustain you through hard times. I would say, like, startups in general, I don't know that they're the best place for a person straight out of the military to join is sort of my gut. I think the transition that I did from business school to big company to startup really worked well for me. And I think knowing other folks in the military and some of their you know, traits and habits, like, I think, you know, would be a good path for people as well. And that's putting aside sort of the macro picture of, you know, is there a bubble that's going to burst in startup land and all that sort of stuff. But I guess what I would say is, like, very general advice that a lot of people give in tech is, you know, if you can get into sort of a mid-sized company that's still private, venture-backed, but doing well, growing revenue, you know, those are the sweet spots to join if you can get into them. They're very difficult to get into. This is sort of the Airbnbs and the Ubers and previous to that, you know, the Facebooks of the world. Like, that's great. If you can get into one of those companies, I would recommend that as the number one thing. If you're looking at super small startup versus something more established, like, you know, a Google or even a Yahoo, that sort of stuff, I think unless you have some experience that is really directly translatable to a role in a startup, I would recommend a bigger company.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And I think giving those comps is helpful too. And I'm sure people can look up and find the number of employees and funding. But I like the examples of companies that you gave just to give them a feel of organizations. Like you said, if you're able to get in there, and I agree, it seems like they have probably a more defined training plan. They have a little bit more structure that could really bring someone from the military up to speed versus that early stage when it's such a free-for-all. There's not as much training, especially coming from a training-rich environment like the military.
Yes.
What about if someone were listening and let's say they have some extra time, they like what you're talking about, and they'd like to start to try to build up a skill set for a product facing role. You talked about coding academies. I'm wondering if there's any other recommendations you would have for them on about things that they could do to prepare, be that books, videos, websites, podcasts, just things that you think would be helpful in starting to learn about this.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the best thing to do if you're able is to talk to people in the role. I mean, even within the role of product management, as you know, there is a lot of variability from company to company and sort of, you know, what all that entails. And so it's good to just get different people's perspectives on, you know, what they like and don't like about it and get their advice. I mean, that'd be the number one thing. I do think there's, you know, more and more online resources, sort of amazing, everything from, you know, General Assembly to Udemy to these code academies where you can start to learn various parts of the skill set, you know, and then there's also things like, you know, Glassdoor and so other, like, one of the interesting things you can do is look for interview information. You know, there's lots of information online about, you know, Google interviews for product managers or, you know, that sort of stuff where you can get a sense for the type of things that you would be asked. And it'll help you really think about, you know, how would I translate what I've done into something that would be a good fit here, and where are the gaps in my experience, you know, where I could go out and find some of this educational content to bone up on.
And I usually like to ask a couple questions more related to your military experience. And, you know, given that you're further out from the military, this could be from your own experience, or I'm sure you've run across so many veterans in the last 15 years. But one of the things I wanted to ask about is kind of strengths and weaknesses of what are some of these habits that we learn in the military that you found useful to you or in general are useful? And what are some of those habits that kind of need to be broken when you leave the military to be successful?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I can talk about it on a personal level and a little bit about sort of what I've seen in other folks. But I would say in the big picture, I've been sort of a little disappointed at how long I've worked in technology and how few, you know, ex-military folks I come across. And part of that, I think within technology, there's obviously a lot of different disciplines. And I think, for example, in, you know, hardware development, places where there's fabrication of actual hardware, like those companies, for example, Intel historically, liked military backgrounds and hired more. Whereas, you know, the software world of and social media and apps, like you just don't run across it as much, which is, I think, a little disappointing. I think for me, personally, sort of on the good habit side, I think, certainly attention to detail, the thoroughness, being organized, like somebody in a product role where, you know, you're managing a lot of different aspects of a business and product, like that is critical. And I think something that, being in the military certainly helped with for me. Like I said before, I think, you know, one of the things I did in the military is sort of trying to treat people as peers and, motivate people who in some cases worked in different departments, didn't work for you as well. That sort of thing for me was good exercise and helped me when I got out. I think, the stereotypical thing to say for sort of the cons are, there's a cultural rigor, I think, in the military that doesn't always apply well in the tech world and certainly maybe not in the startup world. It's that sort of the culture in this environment is, it's very loose and very, it changes a lot from day to day. There's a lot of sort of ups and downs. One day you describe working at Starz, one day you're popping the champagne, the next day you're like, this will never work, we should close doors. And that sort of like variability, I think, is not something that you get a lot in the military, although there is some of it, tends to be a lot more consistent. And that's what I think people are used to. And I think, again, even in big companies, I think projects get shut down or priorities change regularly. And, that can be hard. I think I've seen that for some ex-military to deal with that sort of uncertainty and frequency of things changing.
So one of the things that comes up a lot in these interviews, especially from the vets who have more recently made the transition, is overcoming the sense that their first career decision is permanent. Like they enter into their first job trying to nail it and then being surprised when, a year or maybe 2 years at most later, they move on to the next thing. And they've talked about how liberating and freeing it is to approach a job with more of like a temporary mindset. And you've had half a dozen different roles at different companies. I'm just wondering how you kind of approached that thought of when is it time to leave? When do you know it's time to move on to the next company, role, anything like that? Any advice you'd have on that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, coming from a military background, my dad was a career naval officer, and, you know, and then worked in the civil service for quite a long time, as did my mom. So they, you know, they basically had the same jobs pretty much most of their lives. And, you know, technology in particular is a very, very different world in that regard. And people do move around quite a lot. I think for me, I mean, there's the obvious things like, you know, are you enjoying it? Do you feel like you're still learning? Do you feel like there's a path to growth within the company for you? You know, and frankly, in this world, like, or is there something, you know, those things might all be there, but something might come to you that is just really, really interesting, and you feel like you want to go pursue it. I think what I have, you know, learned over time, in general, sort of a loose rule that I've had is I generally say, like, I'm gonna be somewhere for a couple years. You do see people who jump around probably too often, every year. And I think you can do that, early on for a little bit, but, you know, if you do that for 10 or 15 years in a row, people start to question, how if you're going to stick around or not. But I like to sort of say, okay, I'm going to evaluate things, you know, at the 2-year point and see, do all those things that I care about still hold true? Things like, yeah, like I said, like, all right, am I still having fun? Am I growing? Do I see more opportunity here, both organizationally for me and with the product and the company? And make decisions from there. But it does happen organically as well, where, you know, like I said, you can be really happy and then something really interesting will come along and it's just too good to pass up.
That's great. And one question I had is something that comes up a lot is the reserves. And I don't think that you chose to do the reserves. I didn't do the reserves either. I'm just wondering, looking back on your career, how compatible would the reserves have been? Like, is there room in the career you had to have also been in the reserves at the same time?
I honestly don't think I know the answer to that. I think it would have been hard. I think it would have been easier early on in some regards, just because, you know, at the time I wasn't married and didn't have children. I think, you know, trying to do that now on top of working at a startup and having a family, I think would be very, very difficult. Probably not doable. I think, you know, it's funny because I did not do the reserves. I did sort of the, the individual ready reserve sort of default once you finish your active duty commitment. And funny story about that, there's a couple guys in our business school class who did as well. And in 2003, so I got out of the Navy in 98. When I went to UCLA, my understanding of the commitment was always, you know, 4-year active duty, 4-year reserve. It could be individual ready reserve. And so my assumption incorrectly was that, you know, you after 4 years of reserve duty, you're automatically discharged. And of course, never got any paperwork on that. And so in 2003, when, you know, the second Gulf War started, my business school buddies and I started like instant messaging. They're like, did you ever, are you out? Are we out? You know, we're hearing about some Marines in the IR getting called up to active duty. And, by that time I was married and my wife was like, you need to check on that. So needless to say, I did check and, figured out obviously that you have to write, to resign your commission and that sort of stuff. But I was like, I'm ready to go. And she's like, no, you're not going. Unfortunately, I don't think they needed a lot of extra Supply Corps officers anyway. So,
I'm realizing I kind of gave my personal pitch on Stitcher, but I know that about 96% of our audience uses something besides Stitcher right now. And I'm just wondering if you could explain more about the product that you have helped build and why people might be interested in that.
Yeah, of course. So, we were one of the first sort of not Apple podcast apps. And our original premise really was, you know, podcasting, you know, 10 years ago was a very challenging process for users that involves sort of downloading and syncing to your iPod and all that. And I think what the founders saw was there was, even back then, sort of amazing body of content out there that included, you know, radio shows that people were familiar with, as well as a lot of longer tail content that people weren't familiar with. And there wasn't a great way back then to listen to it. So really, we tried to build something that would help people navigate and discover content that they love within this huge body of podcasts out there. And then the more you listen, you know, continue to give you better recommendations about how to listen. But more than that, just make it easy to drop stuff into a playlist and listen to the shows that you want to listen to on demand. You know, I think a lot of us have had that experience of, you know, listening to a great show on the radio and pulling into your driveway at home or at the office and having to turn off the car, and that was it. You didn't get to hear the rest of it. And so this on-demand nature of podcasts, which, as you know, have been applied in video and music and a lot of other media domains, really 8 years ago when we started was not really part of radio. And this transition's taken a lot longer, I think, than any of us thought when we were starting out in it. But it's really, you know, in the last 2 years, accelerated amazingly. And I feel like we're just on the cusp of it really becoming a mainstream listening behavior.
Oh, man, I'm thinking of I was on the submarine, the USS Alaska, and my brother had burned me a CD of This American Life. And I was on the treadmill training for my first marathon, and that CD of all those episodes kept me sane. And then, you know, now with Stitcher, they have like a great listen later feature where you can download your episodes for offline listening in case you're in a place with spotty reception. And I take that on my run. I was telling my wife this morning, it's like, I just can't imagine doing these longer runs now without podcasts. Like, it's completely changed just the way that you're able to consume. So there's so much incredible content out there. And I just really appreciate the way, for me, Stitcher has made it easy to discover new content and then just make it a seamless experience to listen to the stuff that I really enjoy.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's so great to hear from users because they're so passionate about it. Whenever, you know, on the rare occasion, although there admittedly have been somewhere our service has not been working, the feedback we get is amazing. Like, people are like, I can't go to sleep. I listen to Stitcher every night to go to sleep. Or, you know, I'm going on a road trip and now I can't listen. I get really, really upset. But more than that, they're just like, please, 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 you get the service back up. So that's fortunately very rare, but it is like a, you know, on the flip side of it, a great window into how much people care about it, which is great.
Yeah, yeah. I have to ask too, what are some of your favorite podcasts? What are some of the shows that you derive the most value and enjoyment from?
Oh man, so many. You know, I think I started, you know, with like the stuff that I was hearing on radio, like This American Life being a big one. And then that leads you to a lot of great stuff, whether it's, you know, Fresh Air, interviews, or the Radio Lab is a WNYC show that's really amazingly produced.
I love Radio Lab. That's they Jad and I'm blanking on Robert Krulwich. They may be on my, you know, they always ask that question, who would you have dinner with if you could? Those are two of my favorite people. It's such a great show.
Totally. And then I'm a big sports fan as well. So my favorite podcast, originally really was the BS Report with Bill Simmons, and now his own podcast, Bill Simmons Podcast. But we work really closely with those guys, which is actually talked to Bill Simmons in this last year, which for me was like talking to somebody, a, you know, political lover, talking to Obama, or you know, talking to a quarterback that you love or whatever. So it was really cool. So I mean, Serial, I loved Serial. Yeah. There's so much amazing content out there. It's If anything, as you know, it's just it's hard to find time to listen to it all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for listeners, I'll put links to all those shows on the show notes, as well as a link to Stitcher app, which I highly recommend. Todd, we've covered a lot of great stuff. I always like to kind of just end with something more open-ended, that we've got, you know, a number of veterans and active duty personnel listening. Is there anything else you'd want to say about career, about life, about anything at all?
Well, I mean, like I alluded to earlier, I'd love to see more of them in the tech world. So, you know, if people have interest, you know, I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on a bunch of places, you can probably reach me, and I'd love to kind of hear about those transitions that you're trying to make, and where I can give advice. I think one of the most important things to me is, you know, really understanding and taking to heart that you, most civilians in many industries, they can't make that translation of your military experience to their industry if they haven't been in the military. And so I would encourage people who are thinking about transition really to start thinking hard about, you know, what they're interested in. And once they narrow on that or a few things, like really creating a compelling story about how your experience fits into that civilian role, you know, because you're the one who's going to need to do that translation for people. You might get lucky and you might have a vet who's the hiring manager, or other military folks within the organization that can make that translation, but you really need to own it yourself and make sure that you're selling yourself in the best way possible.
Yeah, I echo that. And that's something that's come up in the past on the show, is just the importance of doing the heavy lifting for the interviewer or for the person looking at the resume, just really telling your military story in a way that makes sense to the specific role you're applying to. Because it is, you know, what is it, 1% of the population or less serves in the military. It's not that common. And so you need to tell them how your skills will make you successful in that role. And a lot of vets talk about taking this, hey, I can do anything approach. And while that's great and maybe true, it doesn't make it easy for the person sitting across from you. So I like that thought. Well, Todd, thank you very much for the time and for speaking with me and for all the great advice.
Yeah, it was fun. I appreciate you hyping up Stitcher on the podcast as well.
Oh, yeah. It's very genuine. I'm just thinking of all the road trips and all. It's like that app has been with me in so many different places. So it's similar to you with Bill Simmons, speaking with you with Stitcher. It's a big thing for me. Thanks for listening. Before you go, three important announcements. First, if you believe in what I'm doing and believe in supporting veterans in their careers, please, please, please help me spread the word. The best way I know to do that right now is by taking 18 seconds to write a review on iTunes. It would mean a lot. Second, based on my interviews, I'd advise any and all veterans to look at servicetoschool.org and the American Corporate Partners. Both are completely free for veterans and give you a lot of great resources for your education or professional life, respectively. Third, there are a ton of other great interviews, resources, and data at beyondtheuniform.io. Check it out, share it with your friends, and drop me a line if you have any feedback, because I'd love to hear from you. Thanks, and see you on the next interview.